This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome to the show. We are going to be talking to Evan Lesser, one of our regular regular people on the show, I should say. And he's the managing director of ClearanceJobs.com. We're going to be talking about a lot of different things today, about what's going on with the clearance job market, about what's happening with government budgets and how it's affecting jobs, government jobs, government contractor jobs. What's happening with new cybersecurity spending? What's happening with troop withdrawals? And how is that going to have an impact on the job market? And also what's going on with BRAC and everything else in the whole market of the federal sector and also defense contracting sector? Welcome to Fed Access, Evan.
Thanks, Derek. Good to talk to you.
Talk to us about, the dynamic. We're in March right now, and so we've gotten past January and February. We've heard about the budget cuts. We've heard about a lot of, DOD spending and other agencies reducing their spending across the board. What are you seeing in terms of the impact of government budgets? Now, the president released his budget. What are you seeing across the board with that, Evan?
Well, there's been a fair amount of a back and forth between the government and contracting world and trying to figure out what cuts are going to float and which will be done away with. But really, within the past couple of weeks, there have been a few things that have happened that could be a signal of things to come. I think the first is that the Pentagon cut funding for a program they've been working on for roughly 15 years, and that's the airborne a missile defense system. This was the laser that was attached to 747 and was proposed to take down missiles in flight. So they spent about $5 billion on that program, and again, have spent 15 years on it, and that was recently cut. And that was definitely something that not a whole lot of folks were completely expecting. I think the second one is the Pentagon cutting the relatively new Global Hawk UAV program. And if you can remember, Global Hawk is one of the celebrated UAVs that has done a lot of work over the past few years,
right,
overseas. But essentially, due to cost overruns and the fact that each separate Global Hawk UAV costs $67 million, I think the Pentagon finally threw up its hands and said it's just not something that could be sustained, even though it's a relatively new program and there's a bunch of new Global Hawks sitting in aircraft hangars for the Air Force to use, and it really is something that's fairly new.
In terms of that, because at first everybody thought that the new revolution was going to be UAVs and drones. I mean, is that kind of a sign to come that, those days, especially as we're pulling out of, certain theaters, as we're pulling out of Afghanistan, as we may not be doing as many attacks in Pakistan, as we're not in Iraq anymore, is that kind of a sign because of the changeover in terms of our military standing, or is that just going to be the Global Hawk program and other UAV programs may take its place?
I really think it's more the latter. The problem with Global Hawk is that $67 million price tag for each one. The idea of UAVs, the concept of UAVs, and the benefits that they provide to the military, mostly the ability to loiter over an area for a long period of time and to not have a pilot, I think, as a whole, makes them less expensive than what they're proposing to replace Global Hawk with, which is to continue using the old Cold War era U-2 spy planes. But, I think it kind of shows that just because a UAV does not have a pilot, it does not necessarily mean that it is less expensive than some traditional aircraft.
Right.
I think the movement of UAVs has it's starting to tend towards lighter, smaller, less expensive aircraft that maybe does not have the full capabilities of something like Global Hawk, but surely costs significantly less.
And even with the UAVs, I mean, when you talk about it, you're talking about a number of people who have to support a UAV dynamic. I mean, you know, a person who's piloting it. You still have to have a number of people who are, you know, mechanics. You still have to have a number of people who are analyzing that intelligence that's coming from the UAV. So there's still a lot of people who are supporting those kind of programs. And we're also seeing, and Evan, I don't know how much this has an impact. We're also seeing it on the levels of Homeland Security or the talk of UAVs, you know, being put domestically. Is that going to also maybe increase some jobs in some areas?
Well, I think that's a smart point to keep in mind because, you know, the Air Force has said that by terminating the Global Hawk program that they can save $2.5 billion over the next 5 years. And while that's a pretty hefty sum, you know, it's not like that's $2.5 billion that's completely saved. There are other costs and other expenses that would be involved. There still is a cost to pilot and man and run U-2 aircraft, if that's truly what they're going to be using to replace some of these Global Hawk missions. But you're right, Derek. There's a fair number of people that are involved, not just in the development and construction of Global Hawk, but analyzing the intelligence, the crews that fly them, all of the repair work, et cetera. So there's really going to be a fair amount of fallout from the termination of that program. From people being laid off.
Is the termination of that program are those people going to be able to get picked up pretty quickly? I mean, you know, given you know, there's avionics and you know, some other kind of technical people, engineers, will those people be able to get picked up pretty quickly in other sectors, so to say? Or we're talking about, because the aerospace has taken a hit with government budgets. I mean, a lot of stuff is whether it be research and development and even some things have been cut off the books. Would those people be unemployed for a while, or can they just go somewhere else?
Well, you know, I think the folks that are employed as fairly high-level systems engineers, electrical engineers, RF, people working on fairly high avionics technology will probably be okay as finding newer jobs, mainly because the supply of those people with security clearance is fairly limited. But the folks that are doing the support of a program like Global Hawk or the Airborne Laser Test Bed that was just cut, you know, those are the folks that I think may have some trouble finding new positions, even though they have security clearance. Those would be the budget folks, contracts, IT support, you know, the mechanics that are actually working on the systems themselves. So engineering-wise, I think they're okay, but definitely those support positions could have some trouble.
You know, as we begin looking forward, I mean, what are some of the other budget fallouts that we're seeing? I mean, any kind of good news that we're seeing in terms of this budget?
Well, I think, you know, good news is definitely something that is subjective. You know, I think pretty much everybody understands that we need some type of military defense cut, being the largest line items in the federal budget. There has to be some cuts, which will be a good thing. But, you know, on the negative side, really just within the last day or two, you know, Al-Qaeda has come out and said that the U.S. decision to cut defense budgets is a sign of weakness. And that's precisely the thing that we do not want to project. Now, granted, some of that is probably spin, but it's exactly the type of atmosphere that we are hoping to not create.
Right. You know, as we begin looking at defense and other dynamics, I mean, there is we are seeing maybe a little bit of more spending on, I know, special operations and possibly even cyber. I mean, you know, is that an area where maybe people should begin kind of looking at a little bit more in terms of, you know, where there may be some increased jobs to support, you know, kind of special operations command, whether it be, you know, Navy or Army or whoever the case is? And then also, as we look towards cyber, I know that General Dempsey kind of talked about that on CNN one day about increases in those areas.
Yeah, you know, if you kind of take a look at what the Pentagon is trying to do is to essentially enhance efficiency and trying to focus on resource optimization. So, you know, some of the things that they'll be cutting, I think, will make a lot of sense. You know, the Air Force, and we can kind of get into the conversation about BRAC, but, you know, the Air Force has said for a while that it has, you know, really an overabundance of installations and that they could potentially be combined and some dropped altogether. And I think that type of optimization is what they're shooting for. And looking at programs, weapon systems, UAVs, whatever it may be, that has significantly run over budget and over time, I think those are definitely the things that are going to be out there most likely to be cut. Cybersecurity is definitely a unique kind of area in the fact that it's almost like UAVs were a good decade ago. You know, it's definitely in its infancy, and the threats are changing rapidly. So the funding that's being put towards it is definitely coming from multiple angles. And as far as the career path that has some stability, without a doubt, cybersecurity is towards the top.
We're going to talk about that when we come back. We'll take a quick break. We're talking to Evan Lesson. He's the managing director of ClearanceJobs.com. ClearanceJobs.com is a site where basically those with security clearances, everything from, and it's everything from confidential, right, Evan? If you have a security clearance, all the way from confidential to the highest level security clearance, right?
That's correct.
Anything from confidential to the highest level security clearance can put your resume on there, find jobs, and use that site to also talk to recruiters. And we'll talk about how the site can be used later on in the show. But we're talking to him right now about what's going on with the clearance job market, what are maybe some good news, some bad news, some trends, and other kind of changing dynamics. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
The U.S. is going to watch very carefully when China releases its military spending budget for 2012 this weekend. The unveiling will also explain why, in part, the U.S. decided to change focus for the future. The swift buildup for the Chinese military is of great concern for U.S. intelligence. There's also angst about China's plans to go into space and eventually launch manned moon missions. There's concern they might deny others opportunities in space. I'm J.J. Green.
How can we determine which armed aerial scout helicopter is best for the U.S. warfighter? By proving it in competition. EADS North America is ready to prove that our AAS-72X is superior to any other armed aerial scout helicopter out there. So let the competition begin. Saying you're the best isn't good enough for our warfighters. You need to prove it. EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
Caps fans, don't miss two big Eastern Conference matchups at Verizon Center against the New Jersey Devils on Friday, March 2nd, and the Philadelphia Flyers on Sunday, March 4th, as the Caps continue their drive for the playoffs, powered by Constellation Energy. The Caps have won three in a row and look to extend their streak this weekend. Caps games are always huge events. The fans are always pumped, always a great time. This is the hottest ticket in town. Tickets are very limited, so call 202-397-SEAT or log on to washingtoncaps.com/singleticks and do your part in building America's hockey capital.
My advice to you, until they upgrade the system, simply turn off PhotoStream on your iPhone the next time you're in Vegas, and then it doesn't go anywhere.
Okay.
Or else, change your Vegas behavior, or else, don't take pictures while you're in Vegas. So now, once you've deleted all the photos in the PhotoStream, you've got to then go to the camera roll and delete those individuals.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
Hey man, what's up? Angie went to Walmart and got this cool Pioneer HD radio receiver, and now she's like, I don't know.
Simple stuff. Check out the buyer's guide at hdradio.com.
Cool buyer's guide. Oh, here's the Pioneer DEH-44, under $120 at Walmart. Angie, hip and smart.
See, dude, hdradio.com has the answers you need, and Walmart has the Pioneer with built-in HD radio technology you want. Now all you need to do is learn how to talk to girls.
Learn about HD radio technology at hdradio.com. More radio, more value.
Your new Cocker Spaniel is waiting to meet you, and you don't have to travel very far. This weekend and almost every weekend, Oldies But Goodies Cocker Spaniel Rescue holds at least one adoption show in the greater D.C. area. Find out where we'll be this weekend by checking out CockerSpanielRescue.com. Stop by to meet the many homeless Cockers of all ages who are looking for their new home. These dogs have already been spayed or neutered and have all their shots. For more information on adoption, fostering, or volunteering, visit CockerSpanielRescue.com.
If you are facing advanced illness or the end of life of a loved one, peace of mind is in short supply. Fortunately, pain-free comfort care is available from the Washington Home and Community Hospices, a not-for-profit organization with a holistic team of doctors, nurses, caregivers, social workers, chaplains, and volunteers. The team comes to you in your home or wherever you call home in D.C., Montgomery, or Prince George's County. For your peace of mind, call them day or night for a complimentary consultation at 866-234-7222.
My family struggled, and it was assumed that while I would go to college, I would have to pay for it myself.
Charlie wasn't sure how to get the money she needed for college. Then she found out about federal student aid and the FAFSA.
I don't think I quite realized what a huge deal actually graduating was. Federal student aid definitely made that happen.
Need help planning and paying for college? Find out more at college.gov.
My name is Charlie, and this is my story.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we are talking to Evan Lesser. He is the managing director of ClearanceJobs.com. And today we're talking about what's going on in the clearance job market. You know, there's been a lot of things happening. There's been some budgets. There's been some different kind of commentary by different defense people about what's going on with jobs. And we're talking about that impact right now. Evan, we were talking about cybersecurity, and cybersecurity is one of those areas that is getting kind of a lot of attention, so to say. I mean, especially as various agencies get hit, other corporations get hit, infrastructure people are worried about. What are we looking like in terms of the increase of jobs, and how far are we looking? Are we talking about 3, 5 years, 10 years of increased growth?
Well, you know, on the job side of cybersecurity, you know, we've seen a steady increase over the past few years. Now, the type of jobs that are out there and that are increasing, I think, is one thing to note. You know, initially, cybersecurity was all about playing defense. It was about protecting networks, understanding when there might be some type of an intrusion, and doing whatever can be done to protect a system against that intrusion. But really, over the past year, we've seen an increase in essentially two types of positions that are related to cybersecurity, and they don't fall into the defense side. They really fall more into offense as well as a similar angle. So the first is essentially on the software side. So we've seen a fair number of increase in the number of jobs for people that can reverse engineer malware, spyware, viruses, Trojans, really able to get in and look at them closely and figure out what makes them tick. And most importantly, be able to essentially turn those back around on an attacker and use those systems in an offensive manner. The second thing we've seen an increase in with regards to cybersecurity is incident response. So these would be the people that are not necessarily on the offensive or defensive side, but they are trained to take a look at a situation and figure out what needs to be done when some type of a breach happens or denial of service attack or whatever it might be. But incident response is its new category that really doesn't fall into offense or defense. We've seen a fair number of increases in jobs for that category.
And Evan, what are we looking like in terms of the skill set required? I mean, are we talking about people? I mean, I know you mentioned software engineers, but are we talking about people who are the new generation of you know, the younger people who are coming out and getting that background in terms of the CISSP or software engineering background or things like that? Or are we still talking about, you know, is it more certifications? Is it more degrees? You know, what is being looked for with these two positions?
Well, you know, the oldest certifications really fall back to the defensive side of things. And I think that's where the CISSP and Security Plus certifications have come in. That's really where DoD 8570 regulations for, you know, anyone that has privileged access on a network to have those types of certifications. What we've seen more recently are the number of certifications that have come out that focus on either the offensive side or on the incident response side. So not too long ago, certified ethical hacking certificate was actually recognized by the DoD, and we're finding more and more certifications that are coming out with regards to incident response. So really, as the range of open positions starts to get fleshed out, I think you're going to see more certifications. And once those get in place, that's usually when the Defense Department comes in and notes which of those certifications are nice to have, which are required, and going on from there.
Is it, I mean, and this is all relatively new, so is it, are we looking at a climate where it's a good entry level market to get into, as well as, is it good across the board? Is it good for just entry level because it's a new market? Is it, you know, good for more mid level? What are you seeing?
Well, you know, cybersecurity as a field has been around for a while, but it really has changed so much more rapidly in the past 5 years that someone that had a CISSP from, you know, 8, 9 years ago is not necessarily going to be trained and ready for what's going on right now. So that really is why the certification programs are changing so rapidly, and people are having to get recertified as time goes on. I would say that the majority of open jobs in cybersecurity are normally requiring someone to have a certain skill set, but not necessarily 10 years of experience. So we've seen a lot of jobs coming out where you really need to be certified and have on-the-job experience, but they're only asking for 5 years of overall experience. And that is something that you don't see in other areas. But to answer your question, yeah, I think that cybersecurity is definitely skewed towards a younger generation.
Are we looking at, you know, because I mean there's an environment that deals with clearance, but I mean for cybersecurity, are we looking at a market where if you don't have a clearance, I mean, are you seeing jobs that don't require the clearance because, you know, they're looking for a younger generation to come on in, maybe coming fresh out of school or, you know, a couple years out of school and maybe working even within the private sector? Is that an area where, you know, people can penetrate the clearance job market and get cleared easier?
That's almost like a yes and no answer. I hate to be wishy-washy, but
okay.
When you think about, I think the bulk of cybersecurity work that's going on, you can kind of point towards the NSA. And, you know, anyone working for the NSA is going to have a high level of clearance. Now, that said, even though a clearance would be required for those positions, the NSA has been really actually quite good about authorizing programs where younger people that might be in college or coming out of college can obtain a clearance, get on some type of apprenticeship, and you know, potentially have a future full-time job working for one of the intelligence agencies, especially the NSA. So it's kind of a yes and no answer. You do need to have a clearance, but you know, the DHS and the NSA, I think, have been really good about working to try to bring in a younger audience.
So more for on the government side, they're trying to bring in, but on the contractor side, I mean, they're still looking first for people. They're not, you know, kind of, you know, beginning the process of looking outside of the cleared market. They're still looking in the cleared market for the most part to see if they can get those people first.
I would say so. And yeah, there's a fair amount of competition between government and industry for these cybersecurity professionals, you know, really due to the fact that the ones that have the training and the skill set as well as a clearance and having the certifications, you know, when you look at it, in some of these positions, there's really not a whole lot of people that can fit that bill. Industry is doing what it can to get people cleared, and I think that's where you see a lot of the competitions and conferences and things that are going on where they're encouraging younger audiences to come in and look for some type of an apprenticeship to gain work with these companies. Now, you know, being younger is definitely a helpful thing as far as obtaining a clearance, and that is definitely where a younger generation has kind of a step ahead of folks that are a little bit older. But you know, I would say the competitive nature between government and industry is definitely picking up. We find a fair number of people moving from one side to the other. The government has, in really the past year, tried to work pretty closely with industry to share the best talent.
We're talking to Evan Lesser. He's managing director of ClearanceJobs.com. We've been talking about what's going on with the clearance jobs market just recently, talking about kind of cybersecurity. Looks like there's some hope in that market. If you are a cybersecurity expert, have the either certified hacking credentials or have the CISSP, but more recently certified in that, or have any other kind of the security dynamics in the cybersecurity field, it seems like the future may be bright for you. We're talking about this on the next segment. We'll be talking about what's going on with BRAC. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Federal IT Challenge is a series exploring the administration's aim to fundamentally change how the federal government purchases and uses IT, and a discussion around one of the biggest goals, reducing the number of federal data centers by at least 40% by 2015. During the show, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, commented,
"Virtualization abstracts the operating system and the data from the device. It provides a certain amount of agility and flexibility from a technological standpoint. Using virtualization and virtual desktop infrastructure to liberate the data from the endpoint device and bring it into the private cloud. That's key. The data in particular, it provides so much more flexibility for multiple devices to be mobile and geographically disparate and still have access to that data."
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
Tune in Sunday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. for Executive Leaders Radio. This show features four of the D.C. region's finest business leaders. Through each of these compelling interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, and opportunities that lie ahead. The show inspires, entertains, and is full of wisdom unheard elsewhere. Tune in Sundays at 9 a.m. for Executive Leaders Radio.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
Navy Rear Admiral retired Elizabeth A. Height, Vice President, U.S. Public Sector Cybersecurity Practice, HP Enterprise Services, on the Cybersecurity Combating Threats to Our Software Environment panel, sponsored by Hewlett-Packard.
There are some incredibly sophisticated capabilities that can be unleashed in this commons called cyberspace that you will not be able to anticipate and you won't see coming. So part of your plan is to defend, part of your plan is to mitigate, and part of your plan is to recover.
Could your IT security have made you less secure? Traditional IT security defenses, firewalls, encryption, and intrusion detection systems are extremely effective, and that's the problem. They're so good that the bad guys are now training their sights on a new target: exploitable vulnerabilities in software applications. HP can help governments secure mission-critical applications by designing security in from the beginning, finding the vulnerabilities inside existing software, and fixing them quickly and cost-effectively. To learn more, visit federalnewsradio.com/HP.
What is the U.S. Department of Energy's human capital and workforce strategy? How is energy tackling the human capital challenges it's facing? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with Michael Caine, Chief Human Capital Officer with the U.S. Department of Energy. That's this week on the Business of Government Hour.
On Wednesday, an extra leap day is added to our calendar. Most of us won't give it much thought, but calendar precision has been important to human civilization and may become a hot topic again. Earth's daily rotation isn't linked to its orbit around the sun, which takes a bit longer than 365 days. So Jason Casabri, a University of Alabama engineer, says here in the northern hemisphere,
if you didn't account for that extra quarter day plus change, then eventually January 1st would actually be in the summertime.
We've pretty well fixed things by adding leap days here on Earth, but Casabri's working on getting to other planets and says such calendar adjustments
might become more important again, because then you have to start worrying about, well, if people are living on Mars, what calendar are they going to go by?
As he works on deep space travel issues, though, Casabri says,
having that extra day just gives me an extra day to get work done.
Find out more at www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Have Federal News Radio headlines delivered directly to your inbox. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we are talking about clearance jobs and what's going on with the market right now. One of our regular guests is Evan Lesser. He's managing director of clearancejobs.com, a job site that is for those with everything from confidential to top secret SEI, top secret SEI with poly clearances, where you can go on there, find jobs, do a job search, talk to recruiters, post your resume, and get some hits from various recruiters from government as well as government contractors, and then go from there and find some success. Evan, BRAC was mentioned recently within the Department of Defense that there may be a new round of BRAC that they're talking about. What's going on with BRAC? What's going on with the current round of BRAC? And then what are you hearing about a possible new round of BRAC coming up?
Well, Derek, you know, interestingly, it really does not seem like that long ago that you and I were talking about the impact of BRAC 2005 and what that was going to have on the job market and on certain parts of the country. But, you know, we're at this point now where last fall BRAC 2005 was completed. A couple things ran over a little bit, but really we can call BRAC 2005 closed and in the history books. At this point, the president has proposed in the 2013 budget not just one, but two rounds of BRAC, one in 2013 and one in 2015. And the idea is to mostly cut infrastructure, trying to make our military and force protection leaner, smaller, and more efficient. Some of that has to do with the fact that, you know, we'd be pulling troops out of Afghanistan and pretty much everyone gone from Iraq. But we're looking at the potential for two rounds starting in 2013.
And looking at the two rounds and looking at kind of the infrastructure and where they're talking about, maybe even kind of, you know, maybe I don't know if we're speculating or not, if we can kind of see the tea leaves. But where are we talking about? You know, the BRAC 2005 really had an impact on Virginia, had an impact on the whole, you know, D.C., Maryland, Virginia area, you know, had an impact on certain other areas in terms of some gains and some fallbacks, you know, Alabama gains, Kentucky some gains and other areas like that. But what are we seeing as far as if there are going to be a two rounds of BRAC? One, can we anticipate that this is going to go forward, you know, and then two, where would be the areas of impact, either in terms of gains or losses?
Well, you know, so far what the president has proposed is that the next two BRAC rounds would be about downsizing. They'd be about removing infrastructure that isn't needed. I mentioned the Air Force earlier.
Mm-hmm.
The Air Force have kind of made it clear that they have roughly 20% more facilities than they need. So I think the Air Force would be kind of the poster child of what the next round of BRAC might look like. Will it take place? I think that's anyone's guess. Just this week, Congress had actually reached out to the president and asked him to forego BRAC 2013 and look at other ways to cut the budget. The problem that's been noted is the fact that, you know, with BRAC, there's a lot of upfront costs that are fairly high, and the savings actually don't happen for a number of years afterwards. You know, 2005 was the start of the last one, just finished up in 2011. The cost savings are probably starting to be seen now, if not in the near future. But you know, there is definitely a price to pay for BRAC and those upfront costs. And with the Pentagon trying to save money, some people think that this is not necessarily the right time for a new BRAC round.
You know, as you mentioned, the Air Force, I mean, the Air Force, especially some of these air bases, I mean, those usually kind of cover some rural areas, you know, Midwest, Texas. I mean, you know, areas not necessarily on the East Coast as much, some of them on the East Coast. But then it sounds it starts getting to the Midwest, parts of California, Texas, and other areas that are out there. Is would we see more impact in those areas rather than seeing it kind of up and down the East Coast corridor, it seems?
Well, you know, BRAC 2005, Metro D.C. was an overall a net gainer in that last round, and I think that will likely be the case if there is a new BRAC initiative. You know, the Air Force was mentioned as being a place where there's definitely a potential room to cut. And, you know, you mentioned Texas. I think if you look at a base like Dyess, you know, the recent numbers that have come out of their economic development offices is that, you know, that Air Force base has a $430 million economic impact on the surrounding area. You know, over 5,000 government employees, payroll of $250 million, and that base alone spends about $41 million each year on procurement and contracts. So, you know, there's really a huge impact that could potentially come out of closing some of these bases or realigning them. Metro D.C. will probably fare well. Interestingly enough, I think that a lot of the changes that happened in D.C. really were end-weighted towards the final year of BRAC 2005. So those have really just gotten into place. But overall, I think the D.C. area would probably be a winner as far as the next round goes.
Do you think that as it relates to the other force, I mean, I know there's some right sizing of the Army. There's some right sizing of the Navy and cutbacks on other areas. Do you think that the BRAC will have, as we change infrastructure, are we going to talk about the same kind of dynamics of the movement of people that we saw before, you know, 17,000, you know, that were kind of moved out of the Arlington, Virginia area? In the 2005 BRAC, are we going to see the same kind of numbers of massive moves of people, or will this? Do you think that these BRAC, because these are more facilities, are these facilities that are already not as heavily used and they don't have as many personnel? So we're not going to see the same kind of personnel changes.
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, I think it really depends on whether the next round of BRAC, if it goes through, is about cuts or realignment. If it's mostly about cuts, you're going to find people, you know, quite literally without jobs. I think a good example of a place where the locals are already starting to get a little bit worried about a new round of BRAC would be a place like Fort Drum, New York.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as far as economic impact, it really is what goes on in that area. You know, 24,000 soldiers and civilians employed, and the annual payroll is about $1.2 billion for that area. So that's at least a third, if not a half, of the jobs in that area. Fort Drum escaped the last round of BRAC cuts, but there were quite a lot of worries. So I really think it depends on whether it's a realignment mostly or a cut. But, you know, every BRAC means movement of positions, and I think that we would see a fair amount of shifting of people going from one part of the country to the other. Unfortunately, with the housing market being what it is, a lot of people simply can't afford to leave. Some people can't afford not to leave, depending on the job situation.
Right.
But it would definitely be interesting.
We're talking to Evan Lester. He's the managing director of ClearanceJobs.com, their job site for those who have clearances that are coming out of basically the government environment, whether it be Department of Defense, Homeland Security, Department of Energy, or anywhere else that you had a clearance under, whether it be confidential or higher, anything higher, then this is a place that you need to put your resume on, do your job search with, and use it as the right kind of tool to help you out with your career. We're going to talk about some of the tools that ClearanceJobs.com have in terms of, and talk about what else are we seeing in terms of the job market right now, what trends are we seeing when we come back. We're about to take a quick break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hi, everybody. It's David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only food and wine variety show.
On Sunday, March 4th, we're going to have a rumble in the studio. Artini is hitting the area bars in March, and we have some of the best mixologists in the city coming in studio to mix it up. Also, we'll have a little tea with a tea sommelier from Blue Duck Tavern.
So let's get ready to rumble. That's Foodie and the Beast, next Sunday and every Sunday live right here on 1500 AM.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Peter Levin, Ph.D., Senior Advisor to the Secretary and Chief Technology Officer, Department of Veterans Affairs, commented during the panel discussion titled Electronic Health Records 2.0, What Does the Future Hold? Brought to you by Booz Allen Hamilton.
We spend a lot of time in the government actually fixing things that are obsolete as opposed to investing in things that could actually move us further along the quality, safety, and cost curve.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen. That's federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen. Electronic health records can offer benefits for patients, providers, and payers, but have not yet realized their full potential. Booz Allen Hamilton believes the next 5 to 10 years will see vast changes in the EHR environment as mobile health applications proliferate, information is more readily shared, and EHRs take on a key role in delivering high-quality patient-centered health care. Count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit myvillagegreen.com. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Garden of Life and Boron.
Caps fans, don't miss two big Eastern Conference matchups at Verizon Center against the New Jersey Devils on Friday, March 2nd, and the Philadelphia Flyers on Sunday, March 4th, as the Caps continue their drive for the playoffs, powered by Constellation Energy. The Caps have won 3 in a row and look to extend their streak this weekend. Caps games are always huge events. The fans are always pumped, always a great time. This is the hottest ticket in town. Tickets are very limited, so call 202-397-SEAT or log on to washingtoncaps.com/singleticks and do your part in building America's hockey capital.
Join Affirm on Thursday, March 15th for an in-depth look at moving beyond the boundaries, accelerating government at the speed of mobility. You'll hear from leaders such as Avi Bender, CTO of Census, Steve Kemp, Commissioner of GSA's Federal Acquisition Service, Rick Holgate, CIO for ATF, and Lisa Schlosser, Deputy CIO of the United States. That's Thursday, March 15th at the Washington Plaza Hotel. Register today at affirm.org.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we have been talking to Evan Lesser. He is the managing director of ClearanceJobs.com. And we've been talking about what's going on with this clearance market right now. Cybersecurity, talking about budget cuts, talking about what's happening with those, talking about a new round of BRAC possibly being on the table. What will be the impact of that? Now we're going to go into and start talking about what is going on in terms of some of the trends we're seeing. Evan, as relates to anything that you're seeing in the market in terms of what employers are looking for, we know about cybersecurity, of course. Any other hot areas right now that people should know about?
It's all about high tech. I would say that the number of technology jobs has definitely increased, as well as the scope of jobs. Finding more and more requests for folks with very specialized skills in certain types of software development, certain types of database work, network management, maybe not the bread and butter types of positions that have been so frequently seen in the past, but much more specific positions with specific requirements. I think in general, with the kind of increased uncertainty in the defense industry, you've got the budget cuts, troop withdrawals. We talked about a possible looming BRAC. People are spending a little bit more time now networking and actually marketing themselves for defense industry jobs than they've done in the past.
You know, with that, and your site is kind of built in for kind of networking, as you starting to look around, I mean, there's a lot of, tools out there to network and maybe even kind of talk about what's on your site, but then also maybe talk about how should a person, whether it be, veteran or somebody who's thinking about these BRAC, possible upcoming BRACs, or anybody who's facing kind of transition, who maybe has a clearance right now, how should they be going about networking, maybe using your site, maybe using other tools?
Well, for cleared people, networking imposes and implies some manner of openness, which is kind of inherently against what a security cleared person would normally do. So there really is a fine line for cleared people to walk, knowing that they have to market themselves, knowing that they have to network and get word out about who they are and what their skill set is. But at the same time, they have this requirement for privacy and secrecy. So we're finding a fair number of job seekers or just simply cleared professionals, trying to talk to us about what's right and what's wrong, where they should be, where they shouldn't be, trying to understand if certain things that they may do online would potentially put their clearance in jeopardy. It's a pretty muddy area, and the government has not really come out and specifically addressed internet-based networking and what the effects of that may potentially have on one security clearance.
So really right now, if a person went to their security officer and kind of said, well, hey, what should I be seeing if I want a LinkedIn profile or something like that? Right now, there's very little guidance as it relates to how a person should be using these tools to network. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. And, at some point, good common sense may not be enough, because what may be a perfectly normal online behavior for someone could potentially mean some type of a threat as far as the government is concerned. I think a good example is LinkedIn, like you just talked about. You've got the ability to create a profile and pretty much instantly share who you work with, who you're connected to, what projects you've worked on, those locations, the companies or which federal agencies, and that's a lot of information that's out there and exposed for someone with security clearance. And while it may seem very commonplace to have such a profile, at some point there needs to be some type of limits put in place that kind of go beyond common sense and let people know that there are some guidelines that someone with security clearance would need to maintain.
As we begin looking at certain things, and you've got a number of different people coming out, as it relates, and I know you mentioned kind of, high tech, is there still a need, or maybe not so, is there still a need for anything outside of technology, whether it be administrative, logistics, operational, are we just seeing those numbers dwindle for those kind of positions as it relates to kind of more support type positions or anything else?
Well, you know, I think one bright spot you can take a look at. You know, we've been talking about DoD dollars, but if you look at Homeland Security and the intelligence agencies, you know, you don't see a whole lot in the news about budget cuts there. And I think that the reason is because, one, they keep their budgets much more closely held to them. The numbers are not as public. But two, everyone understands that intelligence can kind of make or break our security. So I think that one of the positions, one of the areas that we've seen quite a lot of growth in over the past 5 years are intelligence jobs, not just analysts, but collections, just a wide range of intel. So that's definitely one bright spot as far as careers go. Always a need for skilled intel folks, and really from all over the country as well as abroad. I would say, you know, as far as administrative, sales, contracts, those are about the same levels they've been for the last few years. Another area we have seen some growth, and I think understandably with all the talk about finances, are types of positions that work with finance and accounting. So seeing a little bit of an increase.
And when you're saying finance and
accounting. Yeah, in that sector.
When you're saying finance and accounting, are we talking about, people who work within defense or Homeland Security or whoever the case is, who are, dealing with kind of auditing or keeping track of the budget and other things like that? Are we also looking at contract professionals, too?
Exactly. Yeah. Contract management, administration, oversight is definitely a growth area. But as far as accounting and finance goes, when you're counting every dollar and trying to keep costs to a minimum, it's not surprising that we've seen an increase in the number of requirements for people with that type of a background.
And so, they're still looking for more people who have high level clearances who now have that financial background.
That's right. So, management of the finances of a program is going to happen at all clearance levels. There are plenty of programs that require finance professionals with TSSCI and a lifestyle poly. There are plenty that are simply a public trust or a confidential or secret clearance. So it really is across the gamut.
With that whole dynamic, and we've only got a couple seconds left, any at last advice for that clearance job seeker right now? Because it seems like it's a lot on the market.
Well, with all the uncertainty out there, I think it's smart for people to market themselves, but do so within reason. Ask around what your friend or coworker or neighbor may be doing as far as marketing themselves online. May not be appropriate for someone with a security clearance. Just something to keep aware of.
It's listening to Evan Lesher. He is a managing director of clearancejobs.com. Always good advice, Evan. You've got a survey coming out soon. Tell us about this survey, and because we're going to probably have you come back on and talk about this survey. What's going on with it?
Sure, and this will be interesting because I think it ties in with a lot of what we've talked about today. We run an annual compensation survey for strictly for security cleared professionals, and what we take a look at is not just what the base pay is of someone with a clearance, but we take a look at what their full compensation is, bonus, danger time, danger pay, tax-free pay, all sorts of incentives and bonuses. This year, we've taken a much more closer look at benefits as well as job and compensation satisfaction. The results have been tallied. We have more people than ever that have answered the survey and starting to go through the analysis. But there's a lot of interesting things that have come out in the past year, and I think it'll make for a good conversation.
When the survey comes out, we're going to definitely have Evan back on and then talk about the results. I think it'll be interesting for people to hear about what's going on and also help them make some decisions in this job market. Evan, thank you, as usual, for coming on Fed Access.
Thank you, Derek.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch, Friday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFPD. Your source for federal news now.